This is Richard Sachs on Lost Arts Radio Live, our show for March 14th, 2020. And you might be able to tell by the title that we posted that we're going to look at some documentation developing that gives a clue to deeper levels of the current virus situation. But there are a lot of theories circulating around that. One that I just got sent literally in the last hour that I saw is the virus, you know, just a manifestation of 5G. In other words, not a real viral situation. And the video was a doctor at some kind of a gathering that just happened in Tucson. And he was saying that, viruses are totally misunderstood, which I'm sure is true, but I don't think it's the way that he's saying, as he was saying that it's just kind of an excretion of cells and an indication of sickness and toxicity and things like that. That's not the feeling I have. I've been looking at viruses for a long time, and I think that most of them are in harmony with our body and kind of keeping things balanced. And just, killing all microorganisms is probably not a really brilliant idea, but they are real. And whatever the deeper levels that we don't understand about them yet, the idea of contagion is real, and it's been demonstrated over and over and over. And there are many stories that indicate that that's what's happening. Even the blankets that were given to the Indians to make them sick when they are the Native Americans, I guess I have to say now, but the people who lived in America before the English basically colonizers came over, way before Columbus starting. At one point, the Americans were giving out blankets to the natives and hoping they would get sick and get out of their way so they could colonize the rest of the continent without a problem. And it was an indication that contagion is real, and the microorganisms involved in it are real, and the virus situation is real. But it's also being used as a perfect opportunity for the accomplishment of many of the objectives stated in UN Agenda 2030 and the general NWO Agenda 21 that morphed into that, and all kinds of things connected with that. A lot of theories are going around about what it actually is, but at this point it's been made very clear by Francis Boyle and explained further by Mike, whose last name must not be mentioned again if we want to stay on the air, and others, that this was developed, even though the president said this is a foreign virus. Yeah, it kind of is, and that's not a racist thing to say. It's just where it originated. But to go deeper, it originated apparently in an American university in a BSL-4 lab and was sold to the Chinese about 5 years ago. There's documentation of that. It's not really just a theory anymore. And then it was developed further into a bioweapon and released accidentally or otherwise. I think it was probably accidental, at least at the level of the lab personnel. There may be deeper levels to it that was forcing it to get released now. There are clues to that too. But it's actually a weapon, and it was analyzed by labs in various countries showing what it was made of, how it was spliced together. It definitely didn't come out of nature. It's very dangerous. So that part's real, in my opinion, from what I can see. Francis Boyle has explained it. He's the author of the Biological Weapons Convention of 1989 that was passed unanimously by the U.S. Congress and signed by George H.W. Bush, outlining how, biological weapons research, like the kind that's going on now all over the country and in other parts of the world, and in Wuhan, by the way, is not allowed anymore, and it's going on anyway. So that kind of answers the first question if you really look into that. What is it? But the question of what the best response is to it, it's being answered by a lot of doctors brave enough to talk in the current censorship environment. And you guys who are working on censorship and shutting down free speech, you need to listen to this stuff that you're shutting down, because it's very important for your well-being. Everybody needs to know about it. And you're working for cutting off free speech, saying that you're helping humanity and, getting rid of wrong information. That's not true. Some of that information that you're cutting off the most eagerly is actually not wrong. And that you need to start understanding who you're working for. And from your position inside the power structure, there's a lot of good that you could do. So anyway, these doctors that were brave enough to talk are explaining the value of vitamin C therapy, which is being used in a lot of parts of the world experimentally for other things, both IV and orally, and also nanosilver, which has been shown to be very useful, including against certain weaponized viruses that were created in a lab like this one was. Weaponized Ebola, for example, it was the government itself that proved that nanosilver would stop it completely, and then they hid it and tried to attack anybody that would talk about that. That should make you ask questions and investigate deeper what's actually going on and realize that these agencies and authorities, even though the people that are working for them are mostly well-intentioned, the message is very intentionally misleading, and it's hiding information that you really need to know about. Anyway, vitamin C, nanosilver, iodine, chlorine dioxide, general nutrition, sunlight, exercise, sleep, positive healing attitude, especially toward yourself instead of self-condemnation. That's real powerful. And your emotional, mental attitude instantaneously affects your physical body. So that's why it's important to work on all aspects of this. And of course, the labs doing the BSL 3 and 4 work should be shut down immediately, and the program stopped. But there's a third question, and that is, how are the rulers of our country and the world using this crisis to further aims of moving toward global tyranny, population reduction, and beyond that, actually, which we've talked about before? We've had a guest named Celeste Solomon several times in the past. And Celeste is a former FEMA insider, and she has this unusual ability to read and understand documents that come from government agencies and places like that, and then to interpret them and explain them in common language for all of us. And there are documents that are actually evolving right now that tell you flat out how the governments and the people controlling these agencies want to use this situation to accomplish things that are not very good for life on this planet. So I want to bring her in and let her explain what she's found out, and then we'll get into that further. Let me see if I can add Celeste to our call right now. Let's see if this works. Worked last time. Hopefully it'll go smoothly again. Says it's adding her. Hi, Celeste.
Hi.
Welcome back. So I just talked for a few minutes. I don't know if you heard any of it, and said that it's pretty clear where the virus originated now. It came from a U.S. university. It was sold to China and released for one reason or another, probably many levels of reasons. And we talked about what to do in response to it, and a lot of what's being called wrong information is actually really important protocol for strengthening the health and immune system that resists the virus doing damage and can put you in the category of a person that maybe gets it but doesn't really have any damage from it. But there's a third question, and that's that what are the clues that explain to us what the power structure is planning to do with the situation? And from talking to you recently, I think you're discovering some clues about what that might be in documentation that's developing now, right? Not just the old stuff.
Right.
And so I thought maybe you could share a little bit of that and explain it to people.
Yeah, it's been kind of a wild and crazy week.
Yeah.
Basically, the government went stealth. They have classified all the information on the coronavirus. So what that means is you're only going to get pre-approved messages of what they want you to know.
So what part of it is classified then that you can no longer talk about?
It's the team that the vice president always brings out. All right. That information is classified. And if you were to do a FOIA request, It would be denied under national security. So they basically tightened up the communication, and the only thing that will be allowed, you're going to see more and more about trusted sources. Uh-huh. And those trusted sources, of course, are that team and the media people that are fed, you know, the little messages. And then we get the messages.
Oh, CDC is totally trustworthy, right? They're an official trusted source.
Yes, they're part of the team. They're part of the team. So.
Okay.
Okay. And then the one thing that I really was concerned about, well, I'm concerned about several things since the last time we talked, so the virus can kill, but it doesn't kill that many people. But the global governance folks are really preparing for about 80% of the population to be disabled from the virus, and it can also come back. I don't know if it goes at this point, I don't know if it goes into the fat tissue or the nerves or where it goes, but it goes someplace.
Yeah, it does come back without re-exposure. So
yes, it's kind of like shingles, you know, you get it, you know, every once in a while.
Some different herpes viruses do that.
Yeah, so it will act, many viruses or some viruses do that. So this one looks, but this one is more serious. It kind of, from what I could glean from the documents, that it kind of is Lyme-like. So it's not going to go into a full retreat. It's going to just disable you and incapacitate you. You may not have the energy. You may be sickly. Maybe it will go in and do some other things. It's still very early in the game. I mean, we really, yes, coronaviruses, the normal ones, have been around for a long time.
Yeah, there's like a lot of those too. I mean,
right. But this
connected
one
with colds and flu and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. But this one is a novel one that's been created. So then Homeland Security I tripped across it the day before yesterday. This very intriguing peer report about humanized plants. And I read through it. I started reading through it. It's 88 pages. Now, what got my attention is 88 pages, and they're talking about humanized plants. And
you said humanized plants?
Humanized plants. I'll explain it in just a sec.
Okay.
But the medical martial law was 88 pages. So I thought, so it just kind of, you know, I'm trained to pick things up. Mm-hmm. So this morning they announced that, yes, in fact, they are going to use these humanized plants, aborted babies, and humanized mice to make their tests and also for the vaccine. So that came straight from Homeland Security about noon today. And usually they do not post on the weekend, but they made an exception for this. So basically what they're doing is taking, I would assume, I have not finished the 88 pages. I haven't had time.
Okay.
But what I did glean from it is that they'll probably use stem cells from the aborted babies and stick it into these mice and to the plants. And as far as the mice have human blood, human organs, a human immune system. How it interacts with the plants, I'm not that far. It is a protein, and I find it interesting that they are going to take away our protein and reduce our protein load, and then they're going to do these bioweapons with very strange proteins in them. And this is the starting of that. On Friday, when the president had his speech, which seems like a long time ago, but it was just yesterday, he basically said that they're going to fast track everything. Things that usually would have a check and balance in the regulatory process, they are just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, come one, come all. We're just in this frenzy of fear, and we're going to allow everything.
So I guess that's what's great about an emergency, right, is you don't have to follow normal legal procedures. Nothing has to be constitutional. Nobody has any God-given rights. You just do whatever the program wants to do. And there's been a program to mix the genetics of different species for a long time. And I guess they've been irritated that they had to stay so secret. And now this is going to let it be more out in the open, from what you're saying. Sounds like.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, I'm seeing even the insects, and I had heard about this years ago, that the insects would be vectors for carrying some of these diseases. And we just live in a brave new world. And if you want, we can talk about. Another thing I'm concerned about is this hydrogel sensor from DARPA that they want to do, that is injected into you with a syringe, and then it assembles inside your body, and it fuses with your tissue, and then it grows inside of you, and you become one with a computer interface. Mm-hmm. So basically, you become part of the sensor or the node or whatever in the system.
Right. It's a big step toward everybody becoming cyborgs, basically.
Yes. And it's going to be presented to you that we need to know if you're sick before you're sick. And this sensor will tell us if your blood count's off, if your sugar's off, if you're not exercising, or if you're coming down with a bug. It's going to tell everything about you.
How does it get into your body?
By a syringe. Okay. It's a gelatin. Injected. It was originally developed by DARPA because they wanted to put chips in people's brains, but they didn't want to have to do surgery or have an invasive thing. So they came up with this gel. So what they'll do is put this gel in a syringe and inject it into you. And it's a self-assembling gel. So once it gets into your blood, it assembles. And then it fuses to you, and then it grows. So it's really kind of a creepy Orwellian type thing.
Sounds like exactly the kind of thing that they'd love to develop, though.
Yeah.
I mean, recently we're thinking it was bad that they... You know, we're going to check on whether people had taken their so-called medicine or not, their pills, because they had this little dissolving thing that activated in your stomach and sent out a wireless signal to tell the authorities whether you were good and took your medicine or not. And that was bad. But this, what you're talking about, is a lot further advanced.
And you wouldn't even be able to remove it. You know, some people that have been microchipped do change their mind down the road, and they are able to get them out. But this actually fuses and grows inside of your body and becomes one with you, and you become one with the computer. So there's no way to remove it.
Your body's not really human at that point, I guess.
I'm not thinking that it is.
Not completely, anyway.
No.
Interesting. And so where did you see this stuff described, you know, about the gel? And
so that's at DARPA. I'm a frequent flyer at DARPA's programs to just check up to see what they're doing. And then, of course, I've seen it in the government things, documents, because they are looking for a sensor to be able to inject into everybody so that they will know if they're sick or if they're well, and it's going to be for the common good of everyone.
You know? Yeah, it's really reassuring. And so we know it's for your benefit and to make sure you're not sick, but what if somebody with bad intentions ever got into the government? You know, hopefully that would never happen. But if they did, what about using it to change your biological state, not just diagnose it?
That's very possible. You know, and with all the different frequencies, there's a lot of different things that can happen with that. And it's new technology. Who knows how many people that's been done to? But with this fast track process that we don't have the checks and balances, they can just go ahead and start the trials and next thing, you know, try it on three people for a week and say, we're ready, you know.
That fast track concept is really interesting because they use language so skillfully. It sounds like something great, you know, you're going to get the benefit sooner, everybody would support it. But what it really means is no more controls on what can be done, because that would slow it down.
And I think they're not going to tell people, where did this sensor, how was this developed and why? And they're not going to tell people for the vaccine how it was developed, how it came from aborted babies and humanized mice and humanized plants. Perversions, terrible, terrible things.
Humanized plants must mean that they are injecting into the plants, which have a circulation system that you know, keeps them alive. Some kind of cells from humans, I guess.
I would think stem cells. I would think the stem cells.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know what a stem cell from a human would do in a plant, because in a human, they seek out what needs to be repaired and tend to go there. But in a plant, I mean, I wonder what a stem cell thinks when it gets injected into a plant. Said, where's the person? You know, what am I supposed to do? They must have studied that.
Well, I think it probably is in this 88-page document. And like I said, I got about 10 pages into it. I did do an article on it, and it's at shepherdsheart.life. And so people can look, and I did bullet out what I've read so far. Maybe I've read 10 pages of the 88 pages.
Right. So the hint is, this is what they're expecting to really benefit from the current crisis situation, mainly by setting aside laws, constitutions, national sovereignty, things like that.
Right. So along that line, so there was something in the Federal Register, and it did pertain to people coming into the United States, but it is a precedent-setting thing. And because we are in a state of emergency, it can and will be used. And basically, I believe, this is my own belief system, and I think that there's enough documentation to prove it, that the COVID-19 test, if you go to get tested, that they are in fact collecting your DNA, because that is a goal of theirs, is to get everybody's DNA into a big database. And so if you want, I can walk the listeners through that process
The process of collecting DNA, you mean?
No, how they justify it against the Constitution. Oh. It was very interesting.
Well, you know, here's one thing I was thinking of to make better use of our time.
Okay.
We're putting a series of presentations together to try to get it to well-intentioned but not well-informed members of Congress, state legislators, the president, vice president, people like that, all the way down to city government. And what you just suggested walking through is important. What if you were going to incorporate that into a message to these various levels of office holders? Not the ones who are doing this knowing that it's for destructive purposes, but the ones who think that they're working for good and they're just unaware of all this stuff. Maybe what you were about to walk us through could be incorporated into a general message to wake them up and let them know which kind of things to check out for themselves to find out what's really going on and think about what should be done to avoid total catastrophe from the whole thing. And before we get into that, I just wanted to check on one thing with you. You're talking about developing a vaccine to save everybody, you know, in this situation. I thought there was one patented for this before the release of the virus. How does that fit together? Do you know?
Well, I call it the different phases of this coronavirus because it's got so many phases. It's got SARS, it's got MERS, it's got coronavirus, it's got HIV, it's got a few things from are unknown. It's got different animal species contributing to it. Right now, I just did an article this morning that there's cosmic rays are up 12%. And so they're mutating the virus. So it's impossible to have a vaccine that would meet all of those.
Right. Even if you had one that was finished now, next week, it could be a completely different virus as far as the mutations are concerned. So, what was it that they patented if it was completely not up to date with those things? Is it just patented so they can roll it out anyway, and it doesn't matter if it relates to anything that's happening currently?
I don't know. Maybe they'll have several vaccines like they do with the flu. Because I know that DHS just did this announcement for this plant virus thing today, which is different than the patented one. So maybe, and the public's not going to know. They're just going to say, get your vaccine.
And then what happens to people as a result of the vaccines will show that they need more vaccines and they have to develop a new one for next month or something like that. But I don't want to take up too much of the time with that. Why don't you imagine that you're talking right now to a collection of all of these different government officials, from the president on down to city councils and county boards of supervisors and school districts and, the public who wants to sit around the outside and listen in. If we were just spontaneously going to put together, assuming that they want to know, and there are some of them that really want to do a good job. What can you say to people like that when they're so out of touch with what's happening and they don't even know that? I think we have to try to reach the ones that are receptive. So,
Absolutely.
what's the message about what's going on and walk through any part of it that we can? We've got, 20 minutes to get into that.
So basically, the foundation of what they did is found in the DNA and fingerprint law of 2005, and that's Title 10 of Public Law 109. 162, and that gives the Attorney General the power to collect DNA from individuals who are detained, apprehended, arrested, facing charges, or convicted. And see this, now that we're in a medical martial law situation, individuals are going to start being apprehended, as the quarantines increase, that type of thing.
Apprehended because they say they're sick.
So then they say that they have the right to collect the DNA. And then furthermore, the Attorney General has the right to confer to the his power to other agencies. So you can find USDA doing it, FEMA doing it, Homeland Security doing it, Department of Interior doing it. Anybody that the Attorney General wants to have them collect DNA, he can give that power to those people.
Because he needs a lot of help right away, right? So could use census workers, anybody like that, I assume.
Anybody. And so then what happens is they say that your DNA is safe, that there is no way that it can be identified, although through other DNA situations, people have been hunted down, family members, and there have been convictions and people have gone to prison. So that there is, that's just something that they tell the public that it's safe and secure. Yes, it's safe and secure in their hands and they do with it. They swap back and forth. And so your profile is kept in something called the FBI Combined DNA Index System. And that the acronym for that is CODIS, CODIS. And they say that basically DNA is just simply a means of identification for enforcement officers. And of course, in an emergency situation that we find ourselves, so they're going to need our DNA. They also say that DNA, this DNA identification is important whether they are going to keep you longer or release you, you know, into the, you like your custody or your, you know, self-quarantine at home or whatever.
Right.
So now I'm going to go down what they, people objected to DNA collection. And I'm going to read what, how they erased our constitutional protections. So people were concerned about forced or involuntary or non-consensual DNA collection. And they said that any, if you, by your cooperation with any official in any capacity who is collecting your DNA, that means that it is not forced.
That's implied consent.
Right.
Because otherwise it would be violating the Fourth Amendment and other things,
oh,
right?
We're going to get to the Fourth. You're jumping.
Okay.
You're jumping.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so then privacy and discrimination. They said DNA and profiles are kept in secure locations and that the data has been stripped of uniquely personal identifiable information such as your birth date, social security number, criminal record. But of course, we just said that, you know, they swap it back and forth and people are being hunted down. Right. Now we get to the Fourth Amendment. So DNA violates the constitutional prohibition of unreasonable search and seizure. And according to, this is, was in the Federal Register, like fingerprinting, it is considered a reasonable search under the Fourth Amendment, and that the collection of DNA by a cheek swab is non-injurious and a minor imposition. And so there goes your Fourth Amendment.
And now, who was it that decided that?
I'll have to find out who, if this was the Attorney General or if this was, I think, if this was Department of Justice that did this.
But it's in this latest policy paper, though.
Well, this is in the Federal Register, so this is
okay.
Coming into law. So the Fifth Amendment, people say it's inconsistent with the constitutional right against compelling self-incrimination.
Right.
And they say a DNA sample is much like fingerprinting, and it is non-testimonial in character, meaning a DNA sample is not a testimonial communication subject and subject to the protections of the Fifth Amendment. So there goes your Fifth Amendment. What about due process? DNA cannot be collected without an adjudicatory process or quantum of suspicion. And they said the Fingerprint Act of 2005 makes this null and void. So no due process is necessary. The presumption of innocence is the principle that a person cannot be convicted of a crime except upon proof through evidence presented at a trial. DNA collection does not relate to the trial process. It does not convict, punish anyone for anything, nor does it presuppose a person is a criminal. Rather, like photographs and fingerprinting, it is merely a biometric identification measure. But yet in this same document that was 11 pages, and it was the Department of Justice, they do talk about pre-crime. So the ability to do pre-crime through this DNA. What about equal protection? DNA samples do not discriminate against origin, race, or other demographic characteristics, and DNA is a valuable tool for law enforcement. So there goes equal protection. What about cruel and unusual punishment? DNA collection is not cruel or unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment because it is not punishment at all. It is a non-punitive biometric identification measure, much like fingerprinting and photographs, taking a DNA sample is not injurious and is a minor imposition. What about the effect on the innocent? Some persons may be implicated in crimes because their biological evidence was left at a crime scene when they are, in fact, not the perpetrator. They must be inconvenienced for the greater good. So they said that, you know, we have to just have everybody in the database so we can find the perpetrator. What about medical privacy? Does it violate medical privacy and medical ethical standards requiring informed consent? DNA samples are not measuring of medical diagnosis or treatment. They are law enforcement identification measures. There are well-founded and legitimate reasons for retaining DNA samples long after their profiles and everything has been settled. And the Department of Justice assumes that Department of Homeland Security would utilize a system which is called the Electronic Capture Project, EDCP, which is a computerized system designed to collect clinical data in electronic format used mainly in human clinical trials, and coronavirus is a beta coronavirus, and these things that they want to do, like the testing and the vaccinations, we would become the human clinical trial. And so they would be watching it through the sensor that they want to impart on us. And it would be all through the Department of Justice in this electronic capture project. So that's basically kind of what the 11 pages in the Federal Register that just came out a week ago said. It's very troubling, really, how they just wiped away our constitutional protections.
Just for people that don't clearly understand, which I think is most people, what is the role of the Federal Register? If you're talking about things that appear there being basically laws, at least in effect, people that know something about the structure of the government the way it's supposed to be officially would say, well, the houses of the Congress have to, you know, suggest the law, show it has to go through committees, it has to be approved by both houses, president has to sign it, and then maybe it could be publicized in the Federal Register and other places. How do things get into the Federal Register and not go through any of that and just appear and suddenly they're the law?
Through the agencies, and the agencies are outside of the Constitution. So our senators and legislators, they make laws. Let's say I will drive the car today, and they created these agencies to say, okay, how are you going to drive this car today? Are you going to drive on the road? Do you have to wear your seatbelt? Do you have to do this, blah, 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 have license plates, you know, all this type of stuff.
Right. But usually that was in the form of documents that showed policies of a given agency. How does it, you know, and then the policies could be enforced as de facto laws, basically. But isn't the Federal Register, or wasn't it until recently, supposed to be for writing down the laws that went through the usual congressional procedures to become laws? Is it now open to any policies?
This isn't policy. This is regulation. But yes, the Federal Register, if you have a proposed law, it goes into the Federal Register. If you have a proposed regulation, it goes into the Federal Register. When these laws or regulations are finalized, they are finalized in the Federal Register, and they will say, you know, if there were any tweaking that they did because of comments.
But when you say finalized, that's like a final decision for the agency involved.
Right? That puts it into effect. Like this one goes into effect April, like the beginning of April or something.
It's been finalized, in other words. That's how they can say it has a date when it gets implemented.
In an emergency situation, they can, usually it's quite some time so that people can comment.
Yeah,
but this time exactly. They only had like 30 days and then it becomes law.
Okay, so now agencies, which are organizations that really have no constitutional basis to exist because they have powers delegated to them by Congress, and Congress delegated them powers that Congress didn't have,
yes,
according to the Constitution. So those agencies that are basically without constitutional basis, they decide this is the rule, and they call it a regulation. And then
yes,
they say, okay, now it's finalized. It's an emergency, so for your benefit, we had to do it right away, or it's not an official emergency, so we let you comment, and then we say, okay, it's finalized. And then it's essentially not different than a regular law that goes through Congress. Is that what you're saying? Is that accurate?
It's a little bit different, but basically it has the force of law. It does have enforcement.
Okay.
And penalties.
I mean, in application, it's not really very different. You have to follow it.
You have to follow it.
And the enforcers are authorized to enforce it.
Yes.
So we live in a country that looks like it's a congressional republic or a constitutional republic, but actually it's ruled by a whole bunch of agencies and the somewhat unseen forces that control the agencies.
Yes. Yes.
That's kind of a serious situation.
It is a very serious situation, especially given the situation we're in right now. It's very serious.
Because when you add that structure, which is not a constitutional republic, to an emergency that was declared, you have basically an absolute rule by people that you don't even know who they are.
Right.
Working through people that you do see, but who's ultimately giving the orders, we could never have heard their names.
And sometimes we talked about this the last time, that sometimes they know what's constitutional and what's not, and they choose to just go with the flow, with the herd, the capital herd. And so we have very little say.
Well, I think they have lots of people analyzing the current public psychology and saying, do we have any problem putting this into law? And, you know, I guess there's always a stream of laws going through the regular constitutional congressional process, so that we assume that's how all the laws are being made. But really, one of the big things that you're exposing is that most of the de facto laws, that means things that essentially act like laws, they don't go through any of that process at all. They're just declared.
Well, see, that's the scary thing that was said yesterday, is we may or may not see things in the Federal Register. I was expecting a big announcement by the CDC, and it never came up. So I believe that now there's going to be a kibosh on free information that used to be available in the Federal Register, that because of national security, that they may not even put it in the Federal Register anymore.
So they'll just say, it's a law and you don't need to know about it. You just need to do what you're told.
That's it. And we have the guns. And we have the guns.
And they have the enforcement. So that's one step beyond what we just said, that the Federal Register could appear with new laws that you have to follow. Now they can say, there's a new law you have to follow. We'll let you know what it is if we need to. Otherwise, just do what you're told.
That's it.
Interesting. Okay.
And the Federal Register also, like in the past, if they were doing human experiments and other experiments, like one time I'll never forget, because it really made an impression on me, that they had these girls that were about 10 to 13 years old, and mm-hmm. they sprayed pesticide, organophosphate, on the grass. And then they had the girls do the gymnastics. And this was in the Federal Register. And then they watched them get sick like lab rats. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing was playing out in the Federal Register. But that's back in the day when they put everything in the Federal Register.
Everything was put in, yeah. So you would assume once they realize, wait, why should we have to do that? That probably already there's a huge amount of stuff that is basically de facto law that never gets mentioned in there, because it would be so irritating to mention it and have somebody like you read it and tell people. Why would they want to subject themselves to that? So we can assume that some amount is being covertly done.
So I worked in plans, and at the bottom of each page I had to write not subject to public disclosure on each page that I wrote. So I'm sure that they're doing that now for all this coronavirus.
We just don't know what the ratio is between the undisclosed and the disclosed.
Yeah.
I would suspect once they realize, well, it's a lot easier to do stuff and not disclose it, we don't get the resistance. Once they realize that, which I assume they have figured out by now, they would just put a token amount in the disclosed category to keep people thinking that it's all going through that process.
Yes.
So I think maybe the bottom line of what you're saying is that the structure that has evolved is no longer a constitutional republic at all. It's certainly not a democracy. It wasn't intended to be a democracy, but it was intended to be a constitutional republic by the founders. And that's not what it is anymore. I mean, to put it very mildly. So that's the situation. And when you see that as the background, then you see the surface visible part on the health level of this virus. The question is, how do those fit together? So you want to take a minute or two and just give some hints about how those apparently two different levels are connected.
Well, it's basically the Health and Human Services in 2016 passed that medical martial law. It was 88 pages in the Federal Register, exactly what they would do. They defined the terms that there would be quarantines, there would be apprehensions, there would be social distancing, there would be... I don't know, did I say quarantines already? Like where you can't go interstate, interstate travel would be impacted.
And they you're describing something that showed up in the Register?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It was 88 pages in the Federal Register.
2016?
Yes.
Okay.
October 15th.
Okay. So really it's a test right now of humanity to see, are we as unconscious as we seem to be? You know, because this is not something to resist by force. This is going to take something a lot deeper. And I guess that's where we leave it at this stage of the adventure and see. We're going to have that question answered pretty soon. And it's going to be answered one way or the other by seeing what develops at this point. You want to say a minute or so of something that you would advise the average person to take from all this?
So if you go to, let's see, probably my Patreon site, because that's where I've got the information, get public servant questionnaires. I do have the wording and the document to get a constitutional no trespassing sign. I was advised by a constitutional attorney to do that, and it has been very effective. I've used it with much success over 20 years. It does address the biosecurity situation that we find ourselves in right now.
Okay.
And so the public servant questionnaire, what you do is anybody that is taking or your information from a census worker or someone collecting your DNA. You have each person in that process fill it out, and that way you have a chain of custody, of traceability, if you will, of if you needed to find out where your information went and what was being done with it, you could do that.
And what if they just grab you and say, we don't feel like signing anything right now?
You know, each person is going to have to make that decision for themselves. I've had much success with it myself, but
that's encouraging.
But we're, and so have a lot of people across the United States, but we are entering a different era now. Yeah. So who knows how long that will be the case.
And what they're planning to do for the common good.
Yeah.
So, okay, so to get to those forms and print them out and everything, it's patreon.com/shepherd's heart.
Shepherd's Heart Farm. Shepherd's
Heart
Farm.
Farm. Patreon.com/shepherd's heart farm. And the website, the general website, is shepherd'sheart.life.
Shepherd'sheart.life, yes.
Okay. Yes. Sounds great. I think we're going to have to continue this series because we just barely touched the surface of all this stuff. I'm sure you could have talked for another 3 hours or more.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So we'll do some more soon. Thanks for being here, Celeste. And we'll be back shortly. I know.
Okay. So. Well, you take care in the meantime.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay, guys, it's hard to know what to say to that, because if you digest the magnitude of what Celeste just talked about, I think there are many aspects of it, but it's kind of crystallized in the realization that in the U.S., and I know that we're talking to many people who are in other countries right now too, but the reason that the founding of the U.S. was important to people living in other countries is that the Declaration of Independence of the U.S. said that the rights that everybody has, not just Americans, but everybody, and they finally figured out it wasn't just a certain race, it has to include the indigenous people, it has to include both genders and everybody, all ages, and irrespective of religion and all that stuff, everybody, without exception, has the same rights, even if you live in a total tyranny. And that's what they were brave enough to actually say. And probably everybody should read that, even if you're not living in the U.S., because they're saying that those rights belong to everybody. Now, strategically, how you try to take advantage of them, you have to do that with discretion, because you don't want to get yourself in a bad situation by doing that where the rights are not recognized. But what Celeste was pointing out is the U.S. has gone from these idealistic declarations that weren't lived up to ever, but they could be at any part of the world at any time the people are conscious enough. It went from declaring all these rights are unalienable from God and that everybody without exception has them, even though some of them weren't able to realize, well, no, you can't have slaves, you can't be killing, you know, and taking over other people's places by force. You can't do any of that stuff because they have the same rights that you do. So the rights only work if you honor those same rights for everybody else. And that's really to our benefit to do that anyway. That's a long discussion in itself. It's not us against them. We're all in this together, as they say, on a much deeper level than anybody realizes, I would say. And the people that are monitoring these kind of broadcasts for censorship and to try to keep information from getting to the people that need it, you all have the same rights too. And the way that you get to enjoy those is by honoring them and everybody else. So the interests of other people is intimately tied to your own interests. They're not separable. And once that's realized, things in this planet could really change. But will they happen in time? Celeste is saying that at this point, the United States not only has not lived up to the principles in the Declaration and the Federalist Papers and the founding documents of different types, but it's sunk to the point where people who are really confused and are working for evil for its own sake, death and destruction and extermination, which is really the motivation of our highest rulers at this point, although it's hard for people to grasp that. They've transformed the country in some cases all the way down to the local level. Not only is it not a republic, it's being ruled by a covert tyranny that's not even visible, using servants that think they're often working for the benefit of humanity, or as Celeste was saying, the common good, and they're actually carrying out the orders of bosses they don't even see. And that's like if you had a chess puzzle in the morning newspaper that some of you people that are old like me might remember. You see the pieces on this black and white chessboard, and it says, here's the pieces, you have 3 moves to win the game. And people like to do that on weekends or whenever they had time and try to figure out, I got the 3 moves, and they'd win a prize or something from the newspaper. But now we're in the chess puzzle. You know, here's where the pieces are, what Celeste and other people that we've had on are describing. Here's the situation. You've got this virus that's threatening everybody to spread. You've got government mostly populated with really good people that want to do good for humanity, enacting rules put in place, as Celeste was describing, by those who don't have such good motives. And you've got the general population, most of it living paycheck to paycheck or on welfare, totally dependent on whatever the government decides. If they decide to do the quarantining and shutting things down, there's going to be a lot of problems beside the virus that are going to hurt people. And all that and a lot more description is defining where the pieces on the chessboard are right now. It's not the grand chessboard that was talked about in the book. It's the chessboard of real physical level life that we're living in. And we are the pieces, and we're also the players. And everybody is the central player in their own game, trying to decide, okay, here's the layout of the board. 3 moves, how do you win the game? And it can be won, or they wouldn't even do the chess puzzle. It can always be won. And it's not going to be by force. That's a hint. So, you know, we're not talking about anybody rebelling and trying to just be the new dominant tyrant taking over from the old one. That's not the answer to the game. It's going to be one, if it is one, on a deeper level that has to do with consciousness. And that's many shows in itself. It's not a new agey, you know, imaginary belief. It's something real that's not necessarily on the physical level. So you're the center of your own universe in this game. It's up to you. What consciousness are you going to achieve yourself to enable you to make a good contribution to the world situation, which anybody, anywhere can do on a huge level, depending on how self-aware they become. And there's only so much of that we can talk about on a public venue. So, explore real, honor real science that's questioning everything, even your own beliefs, and see what you can find out and how it can help you put things into motion that can change this chessboard that we're being given in a good way. And even the guys that are playing the very bad roles of the villains in this, they're victims because they don't realize that's not who they really are. They've been conditioned to think that, and they're being used as servants, and it's not going to help them either. So I'm talking to everybody, including those playing the bad roles. That's not who you are. You're an incredible being that you're not being told the truth about. So find out. If you want an environment to go into that together and talk about health and life situations and protocols and things that we can't really talk about publicly, that's what Planetary Healing Club is for. There's an access point at planetaryhealingclub.com, planetaryhealingclub.com. You can go there if you want, take a look at it, send in questions if you're not sure if it's worth your time or not. Also, you find us on the Lost Arts Radio website, lostartsradio.com. or our nonprofit website, lostartsresearchinstitute.org. If you want to help us keep our work going and stay on the air with zero commercials and all that stuff that we're doing, please donate if you have the resources, not if you're struggling for survival, but if you have discretionary resources and you think that we're doing something of value and you want to help us, I would really appreciate that. There's donate buttons on those two sites or on subscribestar.com/lostartsradio. And the other thing is, if we disappear from the major platforms, you can find us on brighteon.com, brighteon.com/lostartsradio. And that's a good site to use a lot if you can for watching videos, because they're just growing and they need to be supported by being used. What else? I think that's about it. If you have suggestions of what things you'd like us to be aware of, or questions or comments, we're all learning from each other. Feel free to send those in, richard@lostartsradio.com, and I'll read them all and answer as time permits. Really appreciate that you care about these kind of things. And really, I am talking to the censors and the people who have the negative intent in mind, too. You're just as important as anybody else, and I want to see all of us be okay in the end. So help how you can from the position that you're in, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Talk to you soon.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on subscribestar.com. Just go to subscribestar.com/lostartsradio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sachs, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our Subscribe Star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has 3 weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on 2 YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest news selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit brighteon.com/channel/lostartsradio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.